Hello and welcome to the episode 128 of What a Fab Day. I am your host, Simon Mas. Today, we'll mostly talk about the last part of the Beatles' career with a management contract, an explanation about troubles ahead, and the issue of the band's last album in UK. On the 8th of May 1961, the Beatles, with Pete Best on drums, had another gig at the Top Ten Club in Hamburg, West Germany, for their ongoing second residency in that city. 1 year later, in 1962, the Beatles, still featuring Pete Best in their lineup, started the second half of their third Hamburg residency with a performance at the Star Club. And let's fast forward to 1969 when John Lennon signed a contract to officially appoint Alan Klein as the Beatles' business manager. A final handwritten note on the contract was added at last minute by John, stating that, "If these terms are agreed to, please sign below and our solicitors will draw up more formal agreements," something hinting at the possibility that this was not the final contract after all. The Eastmans, Paul McCartney's in-laws, were also dismissed as the Beatles' legal representatives. We have already talked about the business problems plaguing the Beatles and the appointment of Alan Klein to try to sort them out. Check out episode 28, 32, 34, 37 and 53 of What a Fab Day for more on that. It was today's event to precipitate the Beatles' breakup, though. For a start, it increased the distances between Lennon, Harrison and Starr on one side and McCartney on the other, to the point that they started to defer to their respective lawyers when discussing business matters instead of talking face-to-face. In addition, Dick James, managing director of Northern Songs, publisher of all the Lennon-McCartney catalogue and many other Beatles songs by Harrison and Starr, became concerned about the publishing company. The Beatles had treated him more and more coolly since the death of their original manager, Brian Epstein, in 1967. Moreover, the insider's news about the relationship between the band members made him suspect that the Beatles' future was now really at stake. Finally, the official appointment of Alan Klein as business manager for the band and Apple, Klein's infamous and shark-like dealings in the music business, and his intention to acquire NEMS and Northern Songs for the band at a reduced price, meant badly for James's stake in Northern Songs. This, eventually, would lead to the sale of James's and his associate Emmanuel Silver's shares to Associated Television, putting Lennon and McCartney in front of the fact accompli, but also to the uncovering of an awkward maneuver by Paul McCartney that was probably the final nail in the coffin of the band's future. As Rolling Stone magazine put it, Klein is arguably the one who played the biggest role in the Beatles' demise. In the afternoon, John Lennon and Yoko Ono were interviewed by David Wigg for BBC Radio 1's Seen and Heard at the Savile Row headquarters of Apple Corps. The recorded interview, focusing on the Lennon's peace campaign, the Beatles' use of drugs, anti-Beatles sentiment in the British press, and other matters, was edited into two segments, broadcast on the 11th of May between 3 and 4 p.m. and on the 18th of May at the same times. Before going on with the final story of the day, allow me to quickly remind you to visit www.simonmas.com/support, where you can find all the ways in which you can make the difference and help me to keep producing music-related content for you to enjoy. Thank you for being fab! Let's move to the 8th of May 1970, when Let It Be was released in UK, more than 16 months after the beginning of the recording of what was supposed to be the Get Back project. Little remained of the spirit of the original idea, and for that matter, little remained of the band after the press broke with the news of its demise on the previous 10th of April, as detailed in episode 100 of this podcast. The wall of sound approach to the post-production of the tapes, typical of producer Phil Spector, plus some radical decisions made due to the unavailability of any Beatles to further record material for the project, did nothing to pacify the existing tension between band members. Paul McCartney was upset about the way the production seemed to express contempt for his vision for Let It Be and The Long and Winding Road, both his songs. George Martin and Glyn Johns expressed nothing but anger and vitriol upon the Spector production and for what he had made to the Beatles' sound. The album also sat unwell with a part of the public. Until November 1970, the album could only be bought in conjunction with a book, The Beatles Get Back, with beautiful photos but poor binding, which made for an expensive package. In all fairness, though, it is doubtful that any producer or engineer could have done much better with the recordings. The songs were sometimes subpar when compared to the rest of the band's output. The atmosphere in the studio and the personal relationship between band members were at times terrible. The recordings themselves were made in less than ideal circumstances, using borrowed equipment in the just-opened Apple studio, and the Beatles themselves had turned down two attempts by Glyn Johns to put together the album as it was initially meant to be, shocked to hear how rough they sounded. This concludes today's episode. Tomorrow, What a Fab Day will cover an important development in the early history of the Beatles and another bitter argument from the late part of their career. For the moment, I wish you a good day and a fab continuation. Simon Miles, music you love.